Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Rory West, and on the podcast this week I'm joined by Cameron and Christy.
Hello.
And Harry Tremaine.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that was pretty blunt. That was pretty blunt the view has, but we'll carry on. So what we're going to do this week with the Betfred Cup last 16 playing out over the past weekend, instead of focusing on sort of all the games in sort of depth, what we're going to do is just pick, or we've already picked, I guess, four of the ties to look at sort of in depth. But I think there's some sort of some backstory to most of them. Certainly with some manager heavy chat. So before we get into the four games, what we're going to do is sort of brush over the other ties that happened. So it's kind of starting with Arbroath 1, Dunfermline 3. Dunfermline through the quarterfinals, following on their decent result last weekend, where they beat Hearts 2-1 at East End Park. I mean, Arbroath sort of difficult start to the season's continued, but all in all, pretty comfortable win for Dunfermline, which is I'm sure their fans will be pretty pleased to see them reach the latter stages of a cup competition.
Definitely. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're still unbeaten as well to date this season. So it's been going really well for Dunfermline. And you look at, we thought, obviously, we'll speak a little bit about them later on, but Ewan Murray's kind of doing the job we maybe thought that Shane Duffy would have done, and he just keeps scoring goals from set pieces, which at a phenomenal rate. But yeah, Dunfermline, you've got to be really happy with that. Game against St Johnston in the next round's a winnable tie for a possible, you know, return to semi-final, which I think would be the first time for them for 13, 14 years.
I think 2007 might have been the last time, I think.
Yeah. I think, if memory serves me right, this was part of a quiz that I did, and I think that may have been the last replay of a semi-final.
Oh, yeah, you're right, against Hibs, I think it is.
Yeah.
Or it was.
It would have been, yes. I think like Jim McIntyre scored with 2 minutes to go in the replay, the only goal of the two games.
Well, remind us of those quizzes. Those were some terrible displays.
Oh, God.
But I think for the problem, it's all about keeping that consistency going, because, like we said before, with them in previous years, they've been really good for five or six games, and then they've gone the next five or six without winning them. But it looks like they've been able to put together a consistent run at the minute. So hopefully for them that can continue, and I don't see any reason, you know, they keep everybody fit, that they can't possibly try and go toe-to-toe with Hearts, especially in a shortened season.
Mm-hmm. Hibs beating Dundee by 1-0. Jamie Murphy scoring again. After the goal last weekend, Hibs sort of a routine win again as well for them. By all accounts, a bit of an improvement, I guess, in scoreline for Dundee after the 4-1 defeat a fortnight ago. But Hibs kind of continuing their decent form in the cup competitions. I think that's their third League Cup quarter final in the last 4 years, so they've got some decent form in this competition.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think obviously they've, well, on the face of it, on paper anyway, they've got probably the best draw, albeit away at Alloa, so they'll feel very very confident about making a semi-final potentially. I think, I mean, obviously scoreline would suggest maybe not their best performance, but it's sort of just job done after a slightly disappointing midweek result in the league. And yeah, I think back to winning ways is positive for them. Like you said, for Dundee, not the worst scoreline in the world. Obviously, they've got some big problems to sort out in the league. So for both sides, maybe not the worst result in isolation. But yeah, Ibs obviously will feel pretty good about going very deep in this competition.
Mm. And what's probably
Could you just put out what what a nonsense it is that they both played in the groups and then play in the next round.
It's quite, absolutely. It's quite funny, to be fair. But yeah, it just kind of makes the competition look a wee bit stupid. In what was probably the most even tie of the round on paper and probably in result was Motherwell 1, St Johnstone 2. I think that's St Johnstone unbeaten in 10 now. And from sort of the league results recently as well, they're making a bit of a charge up the table into the quarterfinals of the League Cup. I think... You were a bit sort of critical earlier in the season of Callum Davidson. Has your opinion changed him now, or is he still yet to win you over?
I'm still yet to be fully convinced, but obviously starting to score a few more goals now, a little bit more potent in forward area. So yeah, they play nice stuff. I think some of his general footballing philosophy is very nice to watch, but obviously that doesn't necessarily win you games. Obviously, this is a good run for St Johnstone, who, well, I don't think they're going to be in trouble come the end of the season. So, yeah, they should be eyeing up the cups, and I don't see why they can't go deep again.
Davidson did that. Oh, sorry, Christine.
So, yeah, the other thing is that it's probably massive that for St Johnstone, that Callum Hendry's got an important goal. Really not been firing compared to last year, and obviously he's recently lost the central striker berth to Stevie May. So massive goals for him. The one thing I will say for a bit Motherwell is Ricky Lamy again, just selling out the team. I think it was an underhit back pass this time. I can't remember. I know he made a fault, but I've not seen anything because obviously there's no highlights really anywhere unless the clubs have put them out themselves. But yeah, another mistake from Lamy. You've got to be questioning why he continues to get picked, because he's cost Motherwell a number of goals and points as well this season.
I was going to say, and Callum Davidson did drop one of the sort of cliched manager comments after a cup tie. The cups are really important to St Johnstone. Well, I can't think of a club that the cups aren't important to, Callum. So maybe go back to the drawing board with your sort of post-match comments there. And then the final tie that we'll just sort of skim over, Falkirk 0, Rangers 4, 3-0 to Rangers at half-time. It was essentially, well, it was a game over as soon as Rangers got their first goal after 6 minutes through Defoe. Yeah, I think it's fair to say this trophy could be Rangers to lose now with Celtic departing. I mean, well, given Celtic's run at the minute, maybe not, but yeah, I think they are strong favourites for the League Cup now.
Of course, but you know, they still have, and like you say, obviously they have an easier run out regardless of Celtic's kind of run. I think when they get into the big games, the big occasions, they normally show up, so for them not to be standing in their way is a big boost, but they still have kind of that mental block of not having won a trophy or a major trophy in quite some time. So still a chance for other clubs, but yeah, certainly they're in pole position at the minute.
Yeah, they I mean, it would be hugely frustrating if whatever wasn't capable of being their first piece of silverware since coming back up in the top flight. I mean, I'm not including the Dead Fat Cup and things like that, so the first major silverware. Also kind of depressing the fact, well, probably for us, the fact that Rangers were bringing on players born in 2004 at just 16 years old. I think there's a few people, the dreams are truly dead now. I seen a tweet from Guy saying he was 29, and I think that's the first time he's gone, yeah, it's never going to happen to go and play for Rangers. But, you know, if you're able to rotate the squad, not massively, I don't think they rotated it massively. With the exception of Bassey, that back four probably starts even games in the Europa League and big games, but they are able to make changes and remain just as strong, really. And, you know, it's telling. And then obviously taking the bit of the foot off the gas, being able to bring on youngsters, giving them debuts with a little pressure. You know, he'll be, Stephen Jenner will be happy with going through that and obviously not adding to any injuries or anything like that.
Yeah, so comfortable win for Rangers. I saw them through the quarterfinals, but now we'll move on to sort of the more in-depth stuff. Starting with the earlier tie from Sunday, Celtic 0, Ross County 2. A lot surrounding the game, the game itself in a way has almost kind of been forgotten or overshadowed by, I mean, starting with the crowd stuff outside Celtic Park, but more the chat surrounding Lennon's position. We've said for a number of weeks that we don't think he's the man to take Celtic forward. I think you're probably struggling now to find someone who thinks he is. It seems as though a lot of people and a large majority of the Celtic supporters think time's up. We're recording this at what, like 8:30 on Monday. I was expecting to be coming on tonight talking about Lennon being sacked or left. Not happened so far, which probably suggests he'll be in charge for at least the Europa League game this week. But I can't see how he survived this game. I can't see how he's still Celtic manager today.
Not for me either. I thought I was gonna let Harry come in, but I noticed he's still muted. But no, not for me either. You have 2 wins in 10 as a Celtic manager. I know that maybe people think you need a little bit of perspective, but you know that's just simply not good enough. When you look at it, it's really drubbings in the Europa League to what you would imagine to be the most evenly matched games in the group with Sparta Prague. You know, poor results would have had to come back to get draws, and I think Sunday really should have been the final nail in the coffin. Celtic struggled so much to create opportunities from open play. The only one that I can think of really off the top of my head was when Chris gave a little back heel through to Yeti and he hit it off the post. But other than that, I mean, you're playing against what has been the second, behind Hamilton, the second worst defence in the league, and you're struggling. You're Celtic, you are meant to be the best team in the league, the champions, and you're struggling so much to create any decent goal scoring opportunities while not looking particularly great at the back. I mean, the goal, the penalty that they get, Josh Reid down that left hand side gets so past it, 3 players so easily, and then a clumsy challenge, and you know, Ross County get the penalty, and then a basic set piece where there's 3 players unmarked. Nothing bodes well for Lennon at the minute. He's not getting a tune out of pretty much every single player, and several of these key players look like they'd rather be elsewhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's kind of telling that all these players who have been such consistent performers for Celtic for at least a couple of years, I mean, you're looking at Edouard, and I remember us on last season's review waxing lyrical about him, talking about his, you know, potential ceiling being incredibly high, and he looks just a shadow of the same player he was, would be kind of underselling it. I think he's just way off what he was. So, and that's just a prime example of what's happened to the entire squad under Lennon. Yeah, like you say, only really one standout chance, a lot of kind of, again, pot shots and kind of snatched shots on the turn, things like that. And yeah, it's really worrying. And they're running out of time as well before obviously the Scottish Cup final is in a few weeks. And of course they're still favourites for that game, but you kind of want to be in a position where you're more than just favoured. You know, you're Celtic, you're playing against, okay, it's Hearts, but it's a championship team. It should be fairly routine for them, but at the moment it doesn't really feel like that a few weeks out, so they're sort of running out of time to act, and especially in my opinion, obviously the Europa League's dead for them, so it would make sense to bring someone in, give them a chance to kind of you know, experiment with what they've got, and try and work on some tactical ideas, but just certainly doesn't feel like there's anything left in Neil Lennon's tank.
Yeah, it seems as though, I mean, I think we said after the Hibs game that the next sort of domestic failure you'd have, whether that be in the league or one of the cups, that probably would result in Lennon being sacked, as was kind of mentioned. Looks as though he's going to keep his job for, well, until this podcast comes out anyway. Wait and see if I'd imagine they'll get beat by AC Milan on Thursday night. I'm not sure that will be the sort of result that would result in a sacking, because it's probably expected, but I guess that's just one of the number of things that's went wrong for them this season, is that they're going into these Europa League games, and even though they're already out, they're just pretty much expected to win. Whereas, I mean, we've compared it in the past to that the runs against Lazio last season, who, I mean, AC Milan are top of the Serie A. I think Lazio could have been at the same time last, or this stage last season. And these games are just total nothing games. There's absolutely zero hope for Celtic. And I mean, the point you made about Edward there, that's another thing that Lennon is, so many of these players that were valued pretty high, with Edward, Julien, even McGregor, I know he didn't start the game, but their sort of stock is dropped so far now. We'd have probably, I can't remember the figure that we suggested in that review show, but it was certainly north of 20 million. I think Celtic will probably be pretty lucky to get anything north of 20 now for Edward. There's all that talk online about, from sort of Neil Lennon's, his pals, that sort of camp, that it's the players that have let him down. And while I do believe that Lennon is massively at fault, I don't think some of the players have done Lennon any favours or here. They've performed to such a low level this season. But is there any sort of substance to that thought?
The players have not been anywhere near top form. You've listed all those guys there, and they've definitely had a drop since last season. But when, you know, it's fair enough if it's one. Let's say Edwards had his drop, but yeah, Ayer, McGregor, Christie, Julien have all kept up their standards, then you can look at it as being an individual. But when it's multiple players, you've got to look at there being, you know, some the bigger picture, and the bigger picture probably does come from the coaching staff and the fact that they don't really want to be there as well. There's that as well. I think guys like Ayer and Edward especially, they probably imagine themselves somewhere else by now. I mean, you look at, there was a stage in the summer where, you know, they were getting linked with different clubs every other day, and you've got a feeling that they probably wished that one of them had come through and they've moved on. But at the same time, they're doing themselves no favours if they've almost... See, let's say Edward just doesn't look particularly interested at the minute. He's far from the only one. So Neil Lennon's not blameless, but the players haven't really helped them at all. But at the same time, the players help. You know, the players having sort of almost chucked it, I think is partly down to maybe getting a bit fed up with him.
Yeah, I think it's kind of that. Like, it's just a weird malaise over the whole club. Things are a little bit stale, maybe, and it happens. I think it just in football in general. I mean, there's very few examples of a manager who can just season after season same, and managers who can change up their training methods as well. It's rare. So eventually, it's just gonna come to the natural end of its cycle, and I think that the players underperforming is a part of that cycle. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly, in my view, more a managerial or coaching issue than the players themselves, because, yeah, I mean, the drop-off in results has just been incredible.
Yeah, I think the main theory behind it being the players' fault, not Lennon's, is a lot of just pals not want to slag off their other pal. But I guess there is so many more problems at that club that goes higher than Neil Lennon. I think I'm not sure if we're all sort of like totally in the know to go on about the board level at Celtic, but I think the issue that they face now is that I think if they sacked Lennon after the Rangers defeat, I think most people would have been right, okay, fine. It's given them a chance to try and get someone in, as you said, there has some fresh ideas, while they're not too far behind. Now, I just think whoever comes in is essentially in a lose-lose situation, because I think it's fairly unlikely that they're going to come back and win the league. They could come in, if it's early enough, lose that cup final to Hearts, and that blows the sort of quadruple treble that's the only sort of glimmer that they've got, I mean, left, you could say, this season. And that just causes so many problems on and off the pitch. And it's not that they're just sort of like, they're sort of letting go the 10 in a row, just sort of gradually, they're just making a total arse out this season altogether. But yeah, it's seriously worrying times for Celtic.
I still think, though, I was just going to say, like, you're saying it's a lose-lose situation, and to some extent I agree, but it's still, for a lot of managers who are out of work right now, if Celtic come knocking, of course, you know, they're going to jump at the chance. And some of the names that have been suggested won't get in my opinion, they're a million miles away from getting a bigger job than Celtic. So, I still think that they'd have plenty of potential decent candidates for the job.
I'm not sure they've got that many decent ones that would be prepared to come in now. I think they would have a lot that would be prepared to come in the summer when they've got the chance to start things over again, get rid of players who clearly don't want to be there and start over. But at the moment, I think you guys have said it is a lose-lose. You're in as a firefighter, effectively, at Celtic. The only way you're going to win the league is if you win every single game between now and the end of the season, and based off of what we've seen so far, that's just not going to happen. But I think you've also mentioned the board as well, and I think some people have been quite critical of it for trying to say, well, you've tried to do the 10 in a row on the cheap. I mean, if you look at the business done in the summer, a lot of loan signings. He's come in, but nothing too much more than that. So they've not really gone out and spent too much in the last, let's say, maybe two years, to try and make sure that they reach there, because Rangers have been back. You know, Rangers have spent. They've spent much better than Celtic, and it's telling now, because they've got a certain way in playing, and everybody's on board with what they're doing. Celtic, they chop and change their setup every week, and it feels like they're carrying a number of passengers who, like I say, would rather be elsewhere.
Yeah, I think the point in recruitment there, it's not as though they've tried to do it on the cheap. It's just they've spent a fair amount of money, but it's just their approach to their recruitment has been so poor. It's just pretty scattergun. Like, it's almost, when you're looking at signing a guy like Laxalt, I'm still not convinced by him, and it kind of just looks like, right, okay, let's try and get the most high profile, almost left wing back available. It doesn't matter if it's permanent or loan, as long as we can just get someone in. And that doesn't seem to be working out too well. Same with Duffy. I mean, and we can go on about for ages how bad he's been, but we're kind of going over this and just from a Celtic like point of view. But Ross County, it's an enormous win for them. Was it, they hadn't won in the league for 10? Well, still haven't won in the league for 10, was that right?
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, I don't think any of us, with even how bad Celtic have been recently, would have expected this result, but I think Ross County defended okay. I didn't see the full game, just going by the highlights. Looks like they defended okay, but I wouldn't say they had to put in an absolute 10 out of 10 performance to win this game. Even if you look at the second goal, I don't think the corner is particularly great from Vigers. It's quite lucky how they've managed to. I think Laxall actually clears it or flicks it into the box himself for Jakovic to head in. But yeah, I think, well, obviously a great result for County, but I'm not sure they had to play amazing to get the win.
Yeah, it's bizarre that they've. Well, yeah, again, like normally when we're speaking about these sorts of games, everything has to go right for you. And like you're saying, I mean, they weren't excellent by any means, but to get a clean sheet away from home against Celtic, I mean, that's stunning, regardless of how Celtic are playing. So Ross County deserve a lot of credit. Obviously, Kettlewell's taken a lot of flack from us as well at times in the last few weeks. This is a massive boost for him, but yeah, they need to follow it up. But it's good to see players like, and you mentioned him, Christy, Josh Reid. It's a really nice touch down that left side. Takes like two players out of the game for Celtic, and delivers a dangerous looking ball. Gets a penalty. It's good to see some of these players looking a little bit revitalised. So hopefully they can use this as a springboard and kick on in the league as well. It's obviously it's all well and good getting a result like this, but. You know, losing the league again, they're under serious pressure.
You say that, have you seen what their next league fixture is?
I haven't, I was just away to have a look.
Rangers.
Oh no.
And then they go to Pittodrie, which on the basis of recent form doesn't sound particularly daunting, but that should be an Aberdeen team with several players back, which might make it a bit more difficult than it has been recently. But obviously, I mentioned Reid, and obviously you mentioned him there. That kind of touch, it's not that great. I mean, I don't know why Beaton's come so high there. It screams of a team that really don't know what they're doing positionally or anything like that. I mean, Beaton's come high with a midfielder for no reason, which has left a big gap in. Scott Brown's never going to get there because he towing a caravan at this stage. That's something as well. Sorry, well, I've mentioned Scott Brown. He lasted the entire 90 minutes here in majority game of a 3-5-2. You in a 3-5-2, you do not need a sitting 5 yards sideways pass midfielder. Get somebody like Kincham in there, or play Christie through the centre, or whatever it is, or bring in McGregor. You don't need Scott Brown in the 3-5-2, and that's a big part of it as well. You know, you look at Scott Brown's been playing a lot recently, and he is miles off it at the minute. I know we said the other guys don't have maybe the want to be there and things like that, but they still can show little flashes of what they can do. Scott Brown is just getting run ragged almost every week, and he's having a huge detriment on the team at the minute. I know he's a leader and things like that, but just you've got to take him out, I think.
Yeah, serious problems all around for Celtic. I also thought Harry Payton had a pretty decent game as well for County. He looked pretty sharp and quite neat and tidy in the centre midfield for them. But just kind of to finish this off on this game, do you think Lennon lasts the week, or do you think he's gonna be sacked or leave by next time we record a podcast? Let's see.
Yeah, I think he's gone, and I think that. I mean, I don't think this is the reason that it's gonna happen, but when you see, obviously, we're not gonna get into this, but the sort of scenes that are going on around the club at the minute, amongst some of the fan base as well, the writing's certainly on the wall, and I just don't see how you come back from a result like that. I'm surprised he's not already gone, to be honest.
I'm surprised. I don't think he'll walk for whatever reason. I just don't think that he's going to walk. I think if he was going to walk, he'd have done it by now. So it's going to be, it's a case of the board are going to have to get rid of him. The scenes outside Parkhead weren't great. I mean, I think people, it kind of annoys me to see the the usual journalists of the keyboard warriors, like all this because they've lost one in 36 cup games or something. It goes much deeper than the fact they've lost to Ross County. That's just the tip of the iceberg. It goes back over the past 2 months and the fact that they've been torture, really. I just don't see how Neil Lennon can see out the week, and the Celtic board really have a big decision on their hands, because there's no evidence from what we've seen that Neil Lennon is going to be capable of turning this around.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he'll walk, but I think somehow he'll still be the manager come next Monday or so.
I noticed weirdly that Celtic against Hibs in January has been moved to a Monday. Now, this might be really odd, or this is total speculation. No, I'm absolutely zero base for this. but it is the next game after Celtic against Rangers has been moved to a Monday. Now, I don't know, perhaps that is what Neil Lennon's been given to. He's been given to the Rangers game. It's a case of either close the gap or you win. Well, you keep winning. You need to win every game until then. And if you don't, we'll give you till at least that. And if you get beat for Rangers, then that's it. And then maybe have someone lined up to give them as much time as possible with the team before the next game against Hibs. Entirely baseless, but it might be the case. I mean, it just seems really weird to me to change a Saturday game to a Monday night.
Yeah.
For no real reason.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably buy into that theory. But before we sort of get stuck in some sort of conspiracies or whatever, as much as it would be quite fun... We'll move on to a managerless club, you could say. Livingston 4, Ayr 0. Again, kind of probably going to cover more outside of the actual match itself. We talked last week about Gary Holt's post-match comments, where he sort of suggested that he could be on his way out. He obviously did leave. His post as Livingston manager. I think he kind of the idea from him was that he's probably taken Livingston as far as he could, and I think you could probably agree to that point. But I guess it's kind of a wee bit of a shame that he didn't sort of have the chance to sort of turn things around. They were having a pretty poor season so far, but I mean, all in all, you absolutely can't discredit the job that Gary Holt did at Livingston.
No, he did very well. Of course, that first season back in the top flight was, I mean, it completely astounded all of us. Obviously, he took over just after the start of the season, but yeah, I mean, stunning achievements for a club like Livingston, and yeah, massively overachieving. It's kind of odd that the scope of what is considered a successful season at Livingston shifted so much over the past 2 years, and that's largely down to what Gary Holt did. I still think the decision to walk away is a bit of an odd one from him, because I know there was talk, and I think it was David Martindale who saw this, who said this rather, that perhaps he was expecting a call from a bigger club. I'm not really sure who that call would be coming from for Gary Holt. It's obviously a shame to see him walk away, and look forward to seeing him pop up somewhere else.
You mentioned David Martindale there. His press conference, must have been Thursday or Friday, was bizarre, to say the least. I mean, you can kind of see why he's not stuck in front of the media very often. Some really odd things he said, you know, he's saying stuff like, you know, I think the manager, I agree with his point, because Livingston operate that, the manager has to fit in the structure, and I think that's always why Kenny Miller didn't work, because Kenny Miller wanted to try and change a lot of things, and that's not how things go. But obviously, because Martindale is the head of football operations, which is sort of a director of football, but he's obviously got a much more hands-on role. I think whoever Livingston go to move to bring in, they are more of a I would say a head coach, but at the same time, I think Martindale seems to be the kind of more of the coach. They are more of a manager, not quite a cheerleader, but they are more in there for the motivation and dealing with the players. While Martindale, he's his authority on the kind of the style of play, and that seems to be what he's kind of saying, is that they are going to continue playing and operating as they are, and whoever comes in will have to fit in with how things are operating currently at Livingston, which I suppose would limit your options on who you can bring in. You're maybe, unfortunately, maybe looking to the old boys club, or you're looking for an experienced and a younger manager who's looking to make a name of it and hopefully have a decent run of it with Livingston to move up in the managerial world.
Yeah, it will be interesting who sort of comes in and replaces Holt immediately. I think Martindale did say after the game that he would throw his hat into the ring to become the permanent manager. Whether they want sort of someone who, I mean, all you really need to do is Google him and you'll probably find
out. That's why I thought he wasn't the manager. He wasn't ever the manager, was because of the unpleasantness, will we say. That's why I always thought that's basically the reason that he wasn't allowed to be the manager, despite the fact a lot of people sort of say that he pretty much is the manager.
I thought that as well, but I'd also, I don't know what I heard, but he might not has or didn't have the sort of coaching badges that were required.
Well.
I think, what is it, is it pro?
He needs a pro license.
Yeah, and I don't know if with sort of previous he can maybe go and do those, or whether he wants to do them. I guess it could be another sort of back to that story. But I mean, he's coming in. He's made a pretty decent immediate impact. I mean, they were 4-0 up at half time, absolutely dominated the game. They had 72% possession, 6 shots on target to Ayers 0. Dominated sort of all aspects of the game. I think you could probably imagine that he'll be in charge for at least the next game anyway. I think by all accounts Livingston will take their time on this appointment. I don't think they're going to rush in. I've not really looked at sort of odds or anything and checked who's in the running to or the favourite to take over, but I wouldn't be expecting anyone sort of too high name or anything, even within Scottish football. And that's largely down to what you were saying there, Christy, about they'll choose someone who is willing to sort of fit. I think Martindale said in his sort of pre-match conference that the manager's essentially just a cog in the wheel. And now managers are usually more than just a cog in the wheel at clubs. So, yeah, it's going to be someone who wants to fit into that role, where he's not going to have the full say on how the club's run.
Yeah, I think the McBookie released a list of odds, would have been last week, probably maybe Friday, and there was nobody particularly short odds, and there was all sorts of names in there, so their guess is as good as anyone's as to who's going to be the manager. I mean, I saw people say Tommy Wright, but there's absolutely no way he's going to go in there with their setup. I mean, that's kind of why he left St Johnstone, and Livingston's probably a backward step from St Johnstone. Tommy Wright would be looking to a little bit higher, you'd imagine, than Livingston, with all due respect. But yeah, I guess it's about some of the weird language used in describing your manager as a cog in the wheel openly in the press probably is not the best approach if you're looking for to recruit the best option. But yeah, they do need to fit in. I mean, that's ultimately what he said. It is odd, but you can't criticise it too much, because since they've had Martindale on that head of football operations, they've won promotion from League One to the Championship, won promotion from Championship to the Premiership, settled comfortably and stayed up comfortably in the first season, and albeit in a bridge season, they finished fifth last year. So what they are doing is definitely working. It might have stopped working a little bit, but there's nothing to say that maybe with a new voice on board that what they were doing, they can start doing again.
any sort of final thoughts on the Livingston situation, Haz?
Yeah, like you said, I don't think they should rush to appoint a manager. They should obviously just kind of wait to see how the next few games go under Martindale. Obviously, I feel like it's very early to be making an assessment. You know, he's coming out and saying things. He's obviously joked, but he said this management game is easy after that first game in charge. So, but yeah, I mean, you look at the opposition they're playing. I mean, it's a decent enough team, but there's going to be a lot sterner tests to come. And I think, yeah, we'll see if they can put together as good a performance in the coming weeks. But yeah, I feel like Livingston are the sort of club that can throw out a really left field appointment. So I'm kind of excited for it.
Yeah, I'm feeling that sort of left field choice. I think it's going to take a lot of people by surprise. But Dundee United at home on Saturday, so it'll be quite an interesting game, especially if Martindale's still in charge. But we'll shift on now to, I mean, would you say this is probably the biggest cup set of the weekend? Alloa 1, Hearts 0. A late penalty from Alan Troughton in extra time, getting the win for Alloa, putting them through to the quarterfinals. But I mean, going by the highlights, it looked as though Hearts absolutely battered Alloa, especially in normal time. They had a load of decent enough chances where they could have won the game, but just a bit of a lack of quality in the final third from the their sort of key players let them down, really. There's been some chat on social media about Nielsen's position. I think some Hearts fans are already wanting him gone, which kind of makes things quite funny given the whole Hearts documentary and how Nielsen's return seemed to be a big step forward for Hearts. But is this a massive worry for Nielsen's second spell, that they're already sort of falling to sides who their budget is much bigger than?
I think that's so, so overboard, that criticism. I know, yes, this is disappointing. Like you said, though, Rory, they battered them. They really should have won the game. Obviously, results are what matters, but this is the cup. Hearts, I know that, of course, they're a very good side in the context of the championship, but their full focus has to be on getting back up into the top flight, more so than the cups this year. So yes, they've not started in an ideal way, but if you look at how Dundee United started last season under Nielsen, it wasn't ideal, and then they walked the league. So I think to be talking about Nielsen's position at this point is just absurd, really. And yeah, I don't know what else to say. I think, yes, this is a bad result in isolation, but if you were to, and stats don't decide these things, but if you're looking at the stats of the game and the sort of story of the game, Hearts unlucky, I would say.
This is a bad result, but at the same time, it's a very Robbie Nielsen result. I mean, this is the kind of results that were happening on a regular, well, fairly regular basis during his time with Dundee United. I mean, I don't think he won any games at Alloa as Dundee United manager, and at the same time, it's the cup. You know, Robbie Nielsen just doesn't do very well in the cups, whether that's he doesn't take them seriously enough or not. It's, you know, that's not really the point. Is the fact that I don't think he's made a quarter final as a manager in Scotland in the cup competitions. So yes, probably getting beat by one of the lowest ranked teams left in the competition is probably a surprise, but at the same time, this is a result that Robbie Nielsen's side seen a lot over the sort of the past 2 years.
I'd imagine that sort of shouts are probably coming from sections of the Hearts support that were pretty vocal in wanting him out in his first spell as manager. I mean, after the game, Nielsen was pretty critical of the referee for the penalty. I don't know if either of you thought there was any sort of any doubt surrounding that decision. I thought it was a pretty clear pen, to be honest. Don't know what he's moaning about.
Thought it was a stick on personally. It's just daft in the box. He's sort of lunged in, not got the ball, so don't think he can really argue with it.
I think the other thing is that I think the ball's missed by Berra as it comes in.
Obviously.
from the cross as well. So you've got to be looking at maybe Berra dealing with it. It bounces off of a couple of players, a poor clearance as well. Away, so the Hearts don't defend it well enough. They don't get a fresh on the cross. Berra's got to probably deal with it. There's two players there on the man who's fouled. I mean, it's a bit of a shambles all round in the build-up play, and it's pretty clumsy from Michael Smith, that's for sure.
I think as much as Hearts did batter Alloa, I think they still had a couple of decent chances on the counter-attack where it was pretty clear that they were offering a threat on the break. So as much as Hearts sort of dominated majority of the game, there was still some opportunities where Alloa sort of broke away and created a couple of decent enough chances. But, I mean, yeah, all in all, a pretty poor day at the office in terms of the result for Hearts. But I think, as you said, their main focus this season will be on getting promotion. But, I mean, as we saw last week in the game against Dunfermline, I'm not sure how sort of straightforward that's going to be. But I guess it was kind of surprising as well about this result is they beat Alloa 3-0, albeit at home, on the Wednesday, or was it Tuesday or Wednesday night? I think it was the Tuesday night, which sort of, I mean, makes it a bit more of a better result, you could say, for Alloa. But we'll move on to sort of the final game, unless either of you have anything to add on this game. I don't know if any of you want to mention that mental Christophe Berra tackle.
Oh, it's just really funny that he flies in. It's a terrible tackle. He's quite lucky he's not made contact with the man, and then he takes an age to get back up. I would highly recommend you seek that out in the highlights. It's around 86 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think the funniest thing about it is how long it takes him to get back up. Which, you know, he basically gets back up as if he's about double his age. It's not really what you expect to see from a professional footballer, but no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's a good laugh. Something else that was a good laugh was St Mirren 2, Aberdeen 1. Christy, I'll probably just give you it here. What do you want to say about Derek McInnes?
Get him out.
That's like the what's the Arsenal TV? He's got to go, guy.
It's time to go.
Yeah, I was trying to search for that video on Saturday night. That's kind of my feelings towards things at the minute. We'll go with St Mirren first, so I can allow myself to maybe build up some steam, yeah. St Mirren were very good. They were very lucky not to be ahead by maybe two or three at half-time before Aberdeen sort of fluked their way back into the game. They just kept carving open Aberdeen. I mean, this is a St Mirren team who we've criticised at times for not being very good going forward, but you know, here they create a number of opportunities while taking free kick. Then Richard Tate off the post when he's given a lot of time, someone I can't quite tell who it is spins in past Greg Lee. Lewis has to come out and save. So they had a number of chances to extend their lead after taking it so early. Obviously, they're not that bothered now. They've gone through, but it's one of them that if it could have gone another way. They'd have been absolutely kicking themselves for not being out of sight before Aberdeen got their equaliser.
Yeah, I thought just going by the highlights, I totally agree. St Mirren arguably should have been up 3-0 at half time. I think Jim Goodwin even said after the game, if they were 3-0 up at half time, there couldn't have been any arguments. But the issues for Aberdeen, it's almost starting with the game on Wednesday night against Hamilton, where they drew 1-1 and were absolutely atrocious, especially in the second half. If I'm going to sort of vent my anger at any area of the pitch, centre mid, we all probably agree that Funsu Ojo is not anywhere near good enough for, I think you could almost say, the Scottish Premiership, no matter what team he's playing for. You said before we came on, Christy, he placed a 5-yard pass 5 yards off the man. I mean,
yeah.
Just
behind him as well. Behind him.
That's and
man was running forward. It was I think it was. It must have been because it was out to the left, so it must have been out to Johnny Hayes. And I mean, it was a proper sideways pass, and he pointed about 5 yards behind him, and it was maybe 5 or 6 yard pass. It's just how that's not even amateur football standards. That's horrendous, and you know. I don't think he'd be out of place playing, you know, in a Sunday league team at the minute. Beaten so easily, like we said on last weekend, for the goal against Kent. Even, yes, okay, Joe Lewis has to take massive criticism for the St Mirren winner. But then again, Ojo is miles off him to begin with, to allow him to have the shot. He's so passive. I mean, Dean Campbell's kind of the same. He's passive, but at least Dean Campbell's 5 yard sideways passes are actually finding a red shirt, whereas Ojo's are going out of play, going to St Mirren player, you know, just giving away the ball, really. He is really, really poor, and, you know, Aberdeen probably just have to go and cut their losses with him, to be honest.
Yeah, you're just kind of struggling, and obviously kind of feel a little bit bad singling out one player for what was overall a very, very poor performance all round. But yeah, you're just kind of struggling to see what he's really offering the team. And I know he's certainly only in the team because of injuries and absences. But yeah, I mean, there I've just seen a highlight where there's a St Mirren possession just inside Aberdeen's half, sort of jockeying his man. Ball gets past him, and he literally has stood still for a second. He's completely left his man to run past him, and then he just jogs after him half-heartedly. Like, he's not even really providing much of a screen in front of the defence, so it's hard to understand exactly what the role he's offering the team is. But yeah, I just thought Aberdeen and Aberdeen have struggled when some, and we made this point, the depth that they supposedly have isn't really depth when those players come in and completely ruin the synchronicity and kind of the whole system that they've implemented since the start of the season.
I think that's, I guess you could argue that's an issue for the manager, is that surely he should be able to realise that, right, okay, I'm without a large number of players here, I should maybe revert my shape to suit the players that I've got available, instead of just trying to sort of pigeonhole some of these players into his what seems to be favoured sort of 3-4-3 or 3-5-2, whatever system at the minute. But he's just pretty adamant that nope, it's going to be that's the way we're going to play, and these players will just sort of have to fit in naturally. And I guess that's the only sort of excuse I could give for this, the centre midfielders anyway. But yeah, I mean, I've thought Dean Campbell's been vastly overrated for a large period of time now. I just don't think he's up to the standard. And Probably goes far as saying he's only in the team because he's an Aberdeen supporter, which is a pretty sort of low argument to give for playing someone. But I can't see him getting much better for Aberdeen. But yeah,
I mean, so I think this 3-4-3 with the two in the middle, it only really works when it is Ferguson and McCrory. I mean, you've replaced two all action box to box type players with two pedestrian sitters who like to play sideways passes. That's just not going to work. I think for Aberdeen, they needed to have a bit of dynamism in the midfield. Whereas they've done it before when they've had injury problems and when they've played Johnny Hayes through the middle. And I think maybe having him alongside there could have helped out a bit more energy, somebody who wants to get forward, who wants to take on the ball and take players on. I think that really could have helped. But yeah, I mean, you said their squad depth. On paper, it's there. In reality, it's not.
Yeah, you're spot on about the midfield two. Certainly when I've been watching Aberdeen, it's only really worked when it's been McCrory and Ferguson as a pair. So yeah, like, this is where you get into the conversation about the manager. If he's not recognising that, if he's not kind of looking back at these games, analysing the issues that they have in midfield where they're just consistently being overrun. I mean, I think St Mirren were just finding it very easy to play through Aberdeen consistently in this game, and also running at the defence with no pressure on them consistently. So if you can't see that, then of course there's going to have to be questions asked.
Yeah, I think going forward as well, I mean, it was almost reverting back to what made Aberdeen so bad last season. They were just kind of, and I guess this is a part down to the centre midfielders, because what I find that Ferguson and McCrory do so much better than Ojo and Campbell would do is if they get the ball off the defenders, they'll turn and try and look for a forward pass, whereas, I mean, Campbell will get it off a defender and pretty much just play it straight back to him and run away. And then maybe just get it back and then play it from one side of the pitch, one side of the defence to the other. And that just kind of slows everything down. It's just kind of, as I said, side to side, slow. And there's not really much movement in the final third either. Just all that looked good about Aberdeen in the last sort of 2-3 months has just essentially gone back. McInnes has almost gone back to default, and it's just, as I said, looking back to what made Aberdeen so boring the early, or the sort of the second half of last season.
It's really a real annoying watch at the minute. But you know, the thing is, if you look at the general league form, has been pretty good, but that's been pretty much, you know, par for the course across his time. His three big games this year, Aberdeen have failed in each and every one of them. Sporting Lisbon away in Europe, Celtic in the semi-final, and here. I mean, he wants to be judged on Europe and judged on the Cups. Not made Europe again, and now Aberdeen went into the season with the possibility of three Cups, and it's already we're not even December and it's down to one. Because obviously the league's well and truly out, and nobody expected that anyway. But the problem is the fact, we've said this before coming on, the worst case scenario this season is that the Aberdeen finish fourth, really. And even then, I'm not that convinced that Hibs will finish above Aberdeen either. So there's not that pressure on them in terms of the league. It's all about the Cups, and if, you know, let's say you get knocked out early in the Scottish Cup, then that's the season over yet again, and you've then really got to be asking, you know, what is the future here, because you've got a man who, like I said, he's been asked to be judged on Europe and the Cups, and he consistently fails to deliver.
Yeah,
he's never really offered any improvement, and if anything, obviously in the Cups, it looks like they're going backwards.
Yeah, I think that's probably the one of the biggest issues for McInnes is that it's not as though that, well, I'd imagine the board set these sort of objectives for him, but he's straight up come out and said, judge me on Europe and the Cups. And as you said, he's the things he's asking to be judged on, he's failed on them. And I mean, I can't really see, if the things are to continue, I can't really see much hope for a Scottish Cup run come next year. It'll be really interesting to see what happens when the players affected by COVID return, and if the style of play changes. I think ever since Cosgrove came back, it has gradually reverted back to type, and that's been to sort of Aberdeen's detriment. But yeah, I guess we kind of touching on St Mirren a bit more to finish off with. I guess it's a really good result, and I think Goodwin deserves a lot of credit, and it's not the first time he's managed to sort of organise a team and get a result against Aberdeen. And in fairness, he was quite close to doing it earlier on in the season. It took a bit of sort of Lewis Ferguson brilliance to get a win for Aberdeen, and also in that game, kind of remember that even though he didn't make a sub, I think St Mirren had like four subs.
That's right, yeah.
So there wasn't really much scope for him to change anything.
St Mirren last year, I think they, in the two league games, they were unbeaten. Okay, they lost the game in the Scottish Cup, but the two league games they won one and drew the other one. So, you know, Jim Goodwin's maybe, especially down there, is maybe somebody who maybe has a little bit of McInnes's number, because I don't think, since Goodwin's been the manager, I don't think Aberdeen have ever really swept aside St Mirren. Like St Mirren have been swept aside by some other teams. So he's clearly somebody who maybe does sort of know how to counter McInnes's teams.
Mm.
Yeah, the other thing is as well, and this might sound a little bit patronising, but St Mirren scoring two goals in one game is very positive, regardless of how passive their opposition is. I thought they looked genuinely quite dangerous going forward at times. So yeah, that's definitely positive, and that's what they are crying out for. Of course, they've only scored 7 and 12 in the league, so that's the area they need to improve. And well, of course, Jim Goodwin will kind of be hoping that they can continue to do that and push on in the league.
Yeah, and while the winner was a bit lucky with the mistake from Joe Lewis, I think all in all, they probably deserved a bit of luck, especially just overall, again, I guess for the entire season so far, they've been so unlucky with players dropping out through COVID and all those sort of issues. It's been a bit of a tough season so far for St Mirren, quite stop-start. So I think if one side deserves a bit of luck so far this season, it probably is St Mirren. So,
they didn't get any luck with the draw.
No. Well, that it's their luck's ran out, I guess, there. But that's the old sort of thing. If you ever go on like FM, you win a cup tie, like when you're the sort of underdog and you're buzzing, and then, oh wait, here we go, drawn against like league leaders away, and it's just a right kick in the balls. But unless either of you have anything to add on that game, we can just sort of round things up there.
Yeah,
cool. No worries. So yeah, as always, you will be sort of back next week to look through the Premiership action. You can find us on Twitter, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, iTunes, all that sort of place. Spotify rather. iTunes and Apple Podcasts, the same thing now, aren't they? Yeah, as always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.